Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Art of Saving the World by Corinne Dovis. Narrated by Darcy Rhodes. Prologue. The rift that opened on our farm the evening I was born was like a shard of glass, sharp and angled and not quite transparent, but tilt your head a little and it might as well be invisible. So no one could blame my parents for not noticing it that first week. When I was 6 days old, my parents took me to the pediatrician for my first checkup. They were discussing nursing habits when Dad's phone rang. Our nearest neighbor. There had been an earthquake, she said, or perhaps a tornado, although West Asherton, Pennsylvania, was prone to neither. She knew only this. The worst noise had come from the direction of our house. When the three of us came home, we found our neighbor standing in our driveway and staring at a tree that had collapsed onto one of our barns, surrounded by snow and bare winter shrubbery. It was a palm tree. My parents noticed the actual rift when cleaning up the grounds. Later, they told me it was the size of our three-seater couch and ended in jagged points on either side. It hovered diagonally 3 feet above the ground. The grass and dirt past it were distorted, as though seen through a layer of water, jittery and inconsistent. When they approached the rift, with a rake extended before them, the air trembled. A second later, the rift tugged the rake from Dad's hands and sucked it in whole. Dad almost got yanked in with it. Mom pulled him back just in time. They approached the other side of the rift next, carrying a video camera and a large stone. They tossed the stone through. It vanished. The government confiscated the video, of course, even before deciding to garrison the farm. My parents were urged to leave with only their week-old daughter and hastily packed suitcases. Their other belongings would be shipped to their newly gifted home post-haste. The farther we drove from the farm, the more agitated the rift became. It crackled at the edges, sent multiple physicists and agents into the hospital, and spat out gusts of fire and chunks of ripped-out pavement. It took the researchers a while to suspect a connection and send for us. The rift returned to cool, broken glass the moment Mom stepped onto the grounds, with me in her arms, sound asleep. At first, they thought it was Mom whose absence would cause the rift to go haywire. A 1.5-mile radius. That's how far I can safely roam. Chapter 1. 16 years old, Agent Sanghani raised her hand for a high five as I passed through the gate. I laughed and took her up on the high five. Technically not until 8:37 tonight. You enjoying your last hours as a 15-year-old? I'm planning to. After school. Your dad wouldn't. It's your birthday. I didn't get the day free from school. I don't think Dad'll let me off homeschool either. At least, not until Mom and Carolyn show up. I lingered on the path to the house. Most of the MGA's agents and guards were friendly, Agent Sanghani especially, but when they kept me like this, I never knew whether they genuinely wanted to chat. Keeping me comfortable was probably in their job description. "At least tell your dad it's unfair, all right?" Sanghani said. "Say it came from me. I hear I'm very intimidating." I nodded at the weapon holstered on her hip. "It's probably the gun." "Anyway, I'll tell him it's unfair," I pledged. "If you tell Director Fassett I'd like to stay out longer than 2 hours tonight." Her grimace told me enough. I shouldn't have said it, even as a joke. Cheerily, I went on. Worth a try. The rules weren't Sanghani's fault. She shouldn't feel bad. Director Fassett wouldn't loosen up on the rules anyway, especially since he'd spent the past days tightening them. A power outage from the other day had apparently made the MGA nervous enough to install extra agents and restrictions. I wasn't allowed in the woods, even with a chaperone. Wasn't allowed to walk home before checking in with the guard unobtrusively stationed outside my school. Wasn't allowed to visit the neighbors down the road to pet their horses. I trudged toward the house. With my backpack dangling from one hand, I waved at the security camera affixed above the front door, then reached for the knob. I barely touched it before it burst open. 16! Carolyn tossed her head back dramatically. Practically howling at the ceiling, she repeated, 16! You're here? You're early! She beamed and leaped at me, wrapping her arms around my shoulders. I dropped the backpack and squished my sister close. Mom was already coming down the hall. I jerked a thumb back at the gate. Agent Sanghani didn't mention you were here already. Carolyn's grin faltered. Mom asked her to keep hush-hush. Her and like 5 other agents we saw. What's with the extra security? She hesitated. Anyway, we wanted to surprise you. And it worked. Mom snuggled her face in the crook of my neck and blew a raspberry. I gave the required high-pitched yelp and shoved her off, torn between embarrassment and laughter. The laughter won. I hadn't seen them in 2 days. Not only that, but as I straightened my glasses from Mom knocking them askew, I finally saw the decorations they'd put up. Streamers in all colors crisscrossed the living room, and garlands hung from the paintings in the cupboards. A gigantic card shaped like the number 16 stood atop the table, big enough to bump the ceiling, and I caught a whiff of something sweet in the oven. Wow! I guessed I was free from homeschooling after all. Wow. This is awesome. I didn't know they made cards that big. Happy sweet 16. Mom squeezed my arm. Your dad's on the phone with Grandma Yo, helping set up her webcam. Grandma and Grandpa Stanchek will want to be next.
And Aunt Lena cleared some time for tonight, Dad said from behind us.
He leaned out from the office, holding the doorframe. Webcam chats were the name of the game on birthdays. Only the MGA and the 4 people inside this house knew about the rift. Director Fassett, the head of the MGA, insisted we kept it that way. We'd stuck close-ish to the truth for the story we'd told the wider world, explaining the government had set up a base on the farm, and no one was allowed on site without clearance. Supposedly, we'd spent years entangled in legal battles, with my parents determined to keep the house, and the government determined to relocate us, but in the end, we'd compromised. The base screened the hell out of the family, hired Dad for his non-existent skills as an analyst, and let us stay. That covered why no one could visit us at home. Why I never visited anyone was harder to explain. At first, family members had tried to work around our excuses, but we turned them down so often they'd stopped asking. The Stanchicks eventually settled for occasionally meeting me at the diner where we were holding tonight's birthday party, 1.3 miles down the road, or spending afternoons at the mini-golf course, 0.8 miles down the road. The staff probably saw more of me than their own families. Dad's parents had taken longer to warm up. They'd barely even spoken to Dad the first years he was with Mom. They weren't thrilled about his decision to move in with his pregnant girlfriend of a few months, raise a baby not his own, and live in a house that didn't allow visitors. They'd turned around when my parents finally had Carolyn and married, although they weren't shy about dropping hints about how we ought to change our names from Stanchek to Yo. Dad had stayed back while Carolyn and Mom pounced and simply winked at me. We'd already gone through the birthday routine that morning.
Guess we'll make up for today's classes tomorrow.
Yes, but, I said, we could also not do that? Dad made a nice try face, his smile wry. He'd been of the opinion that if normal kids didn't get to skip school on their birthdays, I shouldn't get to either, so I should probably be glad he'd relented in the first place.
I gave in with a dramatic sigh. Fine. I took off my coat and rubbed my face warm.
Grandma Yo is almost ready, Dad said. Check the windows?
Mom and I adjusted the curtains and the plants on the windowsills to hide the observation tower, fence, and a tank that had arrived yesterday. Tanks weren't common. That kind of thing tended to upset Grandma Yo. I jogged outside to let the agents know to stay out of sight, especially since there were more people on site than usual.
Can I help?
Carolyn asked when I returned. She sounded lost. She came over from Philadelphia several times a week and every other weekend, but wasn't normally around when we called family.
Nah, we're ready.
You do this when we video chat too, right? I never see any MGA stuff in the background.
It's just a security measure. People knew we shared a home with a government base, but the less visual proof, the better. Especially in the hands of teenagers with social media accounts. I thought with a pang of guilt. Carolyn knew the MGA didn't trust her. There was a reason she no longer lived at the house, but she didn't need it rubbed in. Sorry, I felt my cheeks turn red. It had been 2 years since Carolyn moved into the Philadelphia townhouse the government bought us. She lived there full-time while my parents rotated every 2 weeks. I was used to life with the MGA, but to Carolyn, all those precautions might have become alien by now. So much hassle just to visit her sister. Luckily, I could sweeten the deal.
You want to play the Xbox after this? I have early access to the next Elder Signs.
Caro's eyes lit up, lifting a weight off my shoulders.
Heck yeah!
Chapter 2. The diner 1.3 miles down the road might be a nice diner. Quality food, minimal grease smell, clean. But it was a diner, nonetheless. I'd invited a few friends and hadn't missed the puzzlement in their expressions when I mentioned the party's location was Franny's Food. Still, they were used to worse from me, and we were friends. Or, at least, friendly. Maybe they wanted free food. Maybe they wanted to pry for information about the government base. Or maybe they were simply bored, since West Asherton, PA, population 1,704, wasn't exactly an entertainment hub. Whatever the case, they came. There was Neil, Amani, Amberlynn, Mary Beth, and Carolyn. Dad had gone into town after dropping us off, and I knew two agents were sitting in a nearby van hooked into the diner's hidden camera feed. Normally, only one agent accompanied me. Maybe it was because of that power outage. I wanted things back to normal. These changes were putting me on edge.
I wasn't sure what you wanted. Neil pushed a wrapped package my way.
It turned out to be the first book in that rich girl spy series that had been turned into a movie last summer.
I hope you haven't read it yet.
I haven't, I grinned wide. I wanted books for winter break, and this looks great. Thanks. Amani gave me a set of soft purple gloves, which she seemed embarrassed about, but which I loved. Amberlynn, a $15 gift card to Zara that I hoped was redeemable online since the nearest brick-and-mortar store was 20 miles away, and Mary Beth, a massive bag of sour belts, which must have made me blush like a traffic light. Mary Beth McKellen was way too cool to be at my birthday party, and Mary Beth McKellen knew my favorite candy. I managed to be semi-smooth about thanking her, which was a relief, because since her dance performance at school last September, I apparently could no longer talk to her without stammering. I had that in common with half the guys in our class, but Mary Beth probably knew it wasn't the same thing. I hoped she knew. I didn't always know. I passed the sour belts around and was happy for the distraction when Carolyn handed me her gift. A framed original drawing by my favorite comics artist. I squealed loudly enough to make patrons across the diner look up, which turned my face beet red a second time.
I normally didn't celebrate birthdays with friends. You could only have so many birthdays at the mini-golf course before becoming that weird mini-golf girl. An evening at Franny's seemed like a good option, except, crap, maybe now they'd be expecting me to come to their birthday parties, far outside of my radius. My mouth suddenly felt dry. I grabbed my milkshake, sucking down a large gulp. Maybe I should have ditched the idea of a party, 16th or not.
Food!
Carolyn cried as our waitress approached. We stuffed our bellies with burgers and fries that were just the right kind of juicy and crispy, and I urged everyone to order more. Maybe it'd somehow make up for me not attending their parties in return. Afterward, Franny put on a thumb drive with music Caro and I had selected, but no one did more than nod along. A real birthday party had dancing, didn't it? I mean, not my parents' parties, but they were old, and not Carolyn's West Asherton birthday parties, but I bet her real parties in Philadelphia with her friends were different. Parties always had dancing in the movies. Characters our age were always slung over couches or flirting in the kitchen or passing around illicit beer. The six of us having burgers at a diner, wrapping paper strewed all around, might as well have been a 10-year-old's party. I doubted anyone was impressed. Mary Beth spent more time talking to Neil than to me. I'd dressed up in my tightest jeans and a new shirt, bringing out whatever slight curves I had. I'd even put on lip gloss. All of a sudden, that effort felt like I was embarrassing myself. I looked at the clock. 8:41. "We missed it," I blurted out. 4 minutes ago. That's when I was born." I smiled sheepishly. It was dorky to care about the exact minute, but still, 16. "Happy birthday," Amani and Amberlynn shouted as one, then laughed. "Well, again," Amani added. "For real this time," Amberlynn clarified. "Will you get your license?" Neil asked. "Man, I'd love to drive down to Philly whenever I wanted."
"Or even just to school,"
Carolyn added, which I was grateful for. "I'd love to get my license," I lied. "I still need to convince my parents. You know how parents are."
"I know, right?" Mary Beth said. "Mine." I never found out about Mary Beth's parents, as two things happened then. One, Franny butted out of the kitchen carrying a sorbet with a lit sparkler. Two, the doors of the diner slid open, and Agent Anne Volk entered, her suit entirely out of place beneath the fluorescent diner lights. I froze. MGA agents never interfered with my life outside the grounds. Never. It was one of the cardinal rules, both theirs and ours. Ours because we wanted to protect my small imitation of normalcy, and theirs because they didn't want anyone wondering why suspicious adults were always following me around town. But Agent Volk stood right there, flanked by huge cardboard Coke bottles. She gave a nod, indicating the parking lot. "Now?" I mouthed. I still had at least 20 minutes before my time was up, and my friends were just starting to relax. It had been hard enough figuring out what to talk about that wasn't the base. Volk nodded. "Now." The rift occasionally rumbled even when I stayed within my radius, but rarely so badly that I needed to return home. "So much for my birthday." I nodded back to let her know I understood. That way she could go wait in the van before my friends noticed her. I'd need a minute to disentangle myself without raising questions. Why hadn't Volk texted me? We had a protocol. "Happy birthday," Franny sang, approaching the table with the lit sorbet. Two waitresses joined in, and so did my friends, Amberlynn loudest of all. My mind churned with possible excuses. Maybe I could fake cramps? Right as Franny put down the sorbet, Volk stood by my side. I jolted upright. "What?" "Now." Everyone stared at Volk. The woman embodied the concept of government agent. The suit, the furrowed brow, the efficient cut of her black hair. If they looked closer, they could see the gun bulge under her jacket, too.
It was an oddly impressive combination, but Volk's personality had long destroyed my admiration. "Where's Dad?" I asked.
"He's been alerted."
He'd said he'd stay nearby, but they couldn't wait for Dad to subtly escort me out? Something was wrong. Something was really, really wrong. Volk grabbed my arm and dragged me off.
"Hazel's mother requested her presence," she said over her shoulder. "Enjoy your evening."
"I'm coming," Carolyn said.
"No."
I reached to grab my presents, although I was already halfway to the door. "I'm sorry. Stick around if you want. Order whatever," I shouted at the table, hoping they didn't catch the panic in my voice. Volk shoved me into the van, which was sleek black both inside and out, and the driver barely waited for the door to close before tearing out of the parking lot. No sign of Dad. I sat in the middle row beside Volk, my hands wrung in my lap, my palms slick with sweat. Is it the rift? The agreement my parents had signed ages ago said that, while I could ask anything I wanted, I wasn't entitled to answers. We got occasional information about the state of the rift, or the MGA's research, but on a voluntary basis only. The government could be building a nuke right there on our farm, and we wouldn't know. It wasn't a good deal, but by signing the agreement, we at least kept some control over our lives. We all knew the government could keep me at the house whether I wanted to be there or not. And truth was, I wanted to be. Even if the MGA gave me the choice to leave, I couldn't let the rift go haywire and allow people to die because I just had to experience self-serve frozen yogurt. Maybe someone was injured. Sometimes things slipped through the rift, even when I was nearby, and Mom was still at home. Maybe... Volk nodded.
"It's the rift."
"Is it bad?"
"Seems that way."
"How?" I talked as fast as I could, as though that'd give her less time to change her mind about talking to me. "Does it have anything to do with the extra security or that power outage? Is my radius getting smaller?" Volk turned to face me.
"Maybe," she said. "But right now..."
Something thundered across the road. The driver yanked the wheel sideways, and the world turned over. Chapter 3. The tires screamed across the asphalt. No, not the tires, the chassis. I was on my side, weightless, the seatbelt slicing into my shoulder. I was upside down, airbags exploding into the side of my face, back upright like a doll flailed around by an angry toddler. And then it was over. It couldn't have taken long, but it took minutes. No. Seconds. Had to be only seconds to realize it had ended, to realize what had happened. Breath returned to me. I sucked it in hard. The world around me was quiet. The engine was still going, but at a soft, intermittent rumble. I heard nothing beyond that and my own breathing. A metallic tang hung in the air. Someone groaned. "Agent Volk?" It came out like a cough. The van had stopped right side up. I sought out the seatbelt button, letting the belt slip back. My glasses had flown off my face. I pushed away an airbag and found them folded by my side. The back of the van was dented inward. Shards of glass covered every conceivable surface, the floor, the narrow window ledges, the seat.
"Hazel, are you injured?"
Volk leaned in. "I don't think so." Volk looked toward the driver's seat.
"Holloway, you all right? Can we keep going?"
No answer. My breath caught in my throat. "Is she?" Volk unbuckled and pulled herself up by the headrest, bringing her face side by side with Agent Holloway's.
"Ah," she said quietly.
The van had rammed into a tree. The front airbags had detonated, but they hadn't saved Agent Holloway. Cold air breezed in through broken windows. I felt hot and ill and cramped all at once. Dead. Dead. Agent Holloway was... No. Maybe she only needed a doctor. I tried to gather my thoughts. Thursday night. Who'd be on duty at the base? Dr. Gates.
Can we call him?
Hazel.
We need help.
Hazel, it's too late for Agent Holloway.
Valk took my chin. I wanted to jerk away, but there wasn't anywhere to go, so I just stared, wide-eyed, barely seeing.
Listen to me. Can you get out of the car and walk?
I think so.
You need to reach the rift as fast as possible. Run, okay?
Aren't we close enough? 300 yards, 400 maybe. The rift shouldn't even hiccup at this distance.
Go.
I nodded. I thought I nodded. And then suddenly I was outside, the chilly air a welcome relief, even if it stung cuts on my skin I hadn't even realized were there. I climbed from the ditch onto the road and tried to stop my legs from shaking. Steady, I thought. Steady, it's a short walk. You're fine. At this time of year, it got dark quickly, but there were enough road lights to see by. Skid marks stretched out on the asphalt. Farther up, the road was a shape I couldn't identify. I had to walk in the opposite direction, but what was that? Before the crash, something had moved across the road. I'd assumed it was an animal, but this didn't look like one, whether dead or alive. I fished for my cell phone in my pocket, found it thankfully still intact, and aimed the flashlight at the shape on the road. It was yellow, twisted, almost my size. It looked like a plant, maybe a fungus, covered in a wispy layer of translucent hairs. Where the plant touched the road, the skin was damaged, revealing cracks of moist orange flesh. Last year, something similar had come through the rift. It was the kind of thing that made the MGA wonder whether they were looking at an existing plant that hadn't been discovered yet, an extinct or yet-to-have-evolved plant from another time, a mutation of some sort, or perhaps something from another planet or dimension. There was only one reason for this plant to come falling onto the road. My hand went to my mouth. How had the rift spat out something that landed all the way out here? I turned off the flashlight and rang Director Fassett's cell. He always said I could call any time, but I reserved it for emergencies. This counted. With the phone to my ear, I ran, past the van where Valk was crouching by Holloway's side. Farther down the road, Fassett should have picked up by now. Left onto the dirt path to my house that was just wide enough for a tank to drive down. The MGA kept it bump-free for a smooth ride, but didn't want to pave it and attract unwanted attention. The phone went to voicemail. This couldn't be good. Deeper into the trees that grew alongside the path, the gate was already coming into sight, and the house and observation tower behind it. The rift should be dead quiet right now. It wasn't. I'd never seen it act up outside of video, but there was no doubt what was responsible for this chaos. Noise scattered across the grounds, shouting, panicked voices mixed with barked commands. A strange, searing, thundering noise, like the kind airplanes made in movies. I didn't have to wait for someone to open the gate. Something had smashed right through the fence, causing the wiring to curl outward and leaving enough space for me to step through. Sanghani wasn't on guard duty any longer, nor was anyone else. The only people I saw were silhouettes in the distance, racing from barn to barn, or whirling around in disbelief. The electricity was out. The only light came from small fires burning on the lawn and flashlight beams bouncing around the dark. Not the lights in the observation tower, not the lights affixed to the house and the barns. Even the house inside was pitch dark, although Mom should still have been awake and waiting for us. I called for her, slowing my run. My voice sounded small in the havoc around me. I strengthened it. Mom! An agent came limping toward me. Have you seen my mother? I skidded to a stop.
The rift, he panted. You have to get to the rift. Where were you?
He waved toward the central barn as though I didn't know precisely where the rift was. I have to go inside? Being on the grounds had always been enough to calm the rift. Getting even closer couldn't make a difference, and I never went inside the central barn without permission. I'd seen how livid Director Fassett had been when Carolyn had tried to sneak in a few years ago.
Just go,
the agent yelled. Agent Valk is down the road. The van crashed. Can you find Dr. Gates? The rift. The urgency in his voice nearly jolted.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?